All right, good morning, everyone. This is the date and time set for the State Tax Commission open meeting. It's 9 o'clock Thursday, September 27th. I'm Commissioner Bruce Johnson. With me is Commissioner Mark Johnson, Commissioner Darcy Dixon Pignanelli, Commissioner Michael Cragen, and our Executive Director, Barry Conover. Also with us is Krista Johnson, our executive assistant, who's really running the meeting today. This is the time set aside for public comment. Are there any members of the public that wish to address the commission at this time? Seeing none, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is to consider approving the minutes.
This is
for the meeting of Monday, August 27th.
Commissioner Dixon, I think we have more minutes than that.
Yeah, we have another
okay.
set.
I move that we approve the minutes of Monday, August 27th for the open meeting, the minutes of Monday, August 27th for the closed session of that same meeting, and the minutes of Wednesday, September 12th.
Any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. And Mr. Chairman, I would just like to recognize our executive assistant. I think that it's a lot of minutes with a lot of details, and she did a good job on that.
Okay, thank you. That motion passes unanimously. The next item on the agenda is to approve submission of proposed rules regarding the Urban Farming Assessment Act. Commissioner Cragen?
Thank you. We have a proposed rule amendment to Rule 88424P. This will create a Section 73 in that rule. This comes about because of action taken by the legislature in its general session this year, creating in counties of the first class essentially a green belt provision for land in urban areas. Pardon me. And that statute specifies that we need to have in rule some assessment guidelines. This proposed rule has come to us from the Salt Lake County Assessor's Office through the Property Tax Division, and I understand that the folks at the Farm Bureau have taken a look at it, and they think that it looks all right. What we would do today is approve sending it to the Division of Administrative Rules for publication in the Utah Register. So they would be published in the October 15th Register. Public comment would be open until November 15th. And then we could take action if we had a meeting on Thanksgiving Day. But I don't think we will, so it'll probably be the first meeting in December that we would take action on this proposed rule. And we can have any discussion or answer any questions anybody might have before I make a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lytle, would you mind, or someone from the Property Tax Division, just come up really quickly? Thank you. What's that?
No.
Okay.
Danny Lytle, Property Tax Division.
Okay. Could you just explain, just for the public record, what it says productive capabilities of land classified as irrigated one. Can you just explain what irrigated one is and why that might have been the classification chosen for urban farming?
Okay. Thank you. Probably need to back up and give a little background.
Perfect.
this rule is not optimal. It's not the best way to approach this. The best way would have been to have a study done so we would have the actual cost and expenses for the typical crops that are going to be produced on urban farming land. There has not been time for that to happen. And this rule is necessary to meet the legislative deadlines of putting as of January 1st, this will be law. So there, we had to come up with a way to value that land absent the real study that needs to happen over time to get to the real answer. Understand, we don't have data on berries and vegetables and tomatoes and other truck crops that will typically be produced on this urban farming land. So therefore, we do not have the crop budgets to come up with the values like we do under the normal farmland assessment program. Irrigated one is the highest value, most productive land in Salt Lake County. And given the types of crops that will be produced on this urban farming land, that seemed to be a reasonable approach to get to a reasonable value for this 1 year. I personally feel like the research needs to be done to get to a more definitive value that's more defendable and supportable, but this is the best that we have at the moment, and it seems reasonable in my mind.
So, Mr. Lytle, do you anticipate that the Property Tax Division will be working with Salt Lake County to do that research in the upcoming year?
Salt Lake County, by legislation, is directed to do that research themselves.
Okay.
And we tried, when the bill first came out, we were tasked with doing that. We talked to Utah State University, put a $30,000 fiscal note on the bill, which in my mind seems very reasonable to do this research. And then the bill was changed to task Salt Lake County with doing the research. We continue to suggest to Salt Lake County that the research needs to be done.
Okay.
And if this is expanded to other counties in this coming session, which I personally anticipate, then they may retask the tax commission with coming up with the values, and we would have Utah State become involved at that point.
Okay, great, thank you. And just really quickly, so Salt Lake County is tasked with it, but you don't have any indication as to whether they're moving forward to do that?
They have not at this point.
Okay. And could you just quickly refresh my memory? We did have a question with some farmers at one point regarding rotated irrigated land. Do you recall that? You're not recalling
I'm
that?
I'm not recalling, I'm sorry.
Okay, all right. I was just wondering if this was the same irrigated land designation that we used for them. When they graze, irrigated grazed land?
No, it is not.
Okay, irrigated grazed land was the one I was talking about. No, so it's separate.
That is a separate issue.
Thank
and
you.
That land is much lower valued than this,
than
the ground
this
that
land.
We're talking about.
Okay, so we're not mixing the two. That was my concern.
We're,
I just wanted
not.
To make sure we're not mixing the two. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Lytle?
Thank you.
Denny, I do have one. About what is the value breaker for irrigated?
It ranges from the 200 range to the 800 range, depending on the type of ground and the county.
And then this would be?
How much?
742. So pretty minimal value, even though it may be.
Correct. Significantly different than market value.
Yeah. Okay. So the rule will, pending the study, the rule will clearly effectuate what the legislature intended to happen.
It will, in my opinion.
I notice we have Mr. Shaw from the county, and he indicated an interest in speaking. Was it to this issue or?
No, Commissioner, it's to another issue.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I haven't talked to the assessor about this issue, so I don't really have any information on this particular issue.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions regarding the rule, the proposed rule? Okay, seeing none.
And I move that we submit the amendment
884-24P-73 to the Division of Administrative Rules for publication in the Utah Register.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? It appears that it passes unanimously. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is to consider amending some administrative rules. Commissioner Cragen.
Thank you. We have two amendments before us. The public comment period ended on the 15th of September on these two rules. We actually did receive public comment on both of them. The first one we want to look at is an amendment to Rule 8611A. This is a change to Section 12 of that amendment. This is the one that came about because the Motor Vehicle Enforcement Division asked us to start sending copies of orders related to their licensure cases, their license appeals of their licensure decisions to the dealerships as well as the licensees. And we felt that we had to make it clear in rule that those hearings on those appeals are public open hearings and that the information from those hearings will be published publicly. At the same time, we also undertook to put into rule what has been our historical practice of treating other appeals, particularly property tax appeals, as closed hearings and limiting any publication of the orders from those hearings to our redaction program, absent consent from the parties to make a wider publication. I did send a copy of this proposed rule to the Taxpayers Association, as you all asked me to at the meeting where we approved sending this in for publication, and I received no response. We did, however, receive some comment from Mr. Shaw on behalf of Salt Lake County. And in a nutshell, his concern is that the rule may be seen as limiting the county's ability to be able to share information that by statute they are already permitted to share. I think that's all the introduction I want to make. I think I'm sure Mr. Shaw will want to speak on behalf of the county, and then we may have some other discussion amongst us as well. Come on up, Zach.
Any questions for Mr. Cragen before we go to Mr. Shaw? Mr. Shaw, welcome. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Commissioners and Executive Director. It's Zachary Shaw with the Salt Lake County District Attorney's Office representing Salt Lake County. The county just has one concern. I think it is an easy one to remedy. As Commissioner Cragen mentioned, the county's only concern with the rule is that the county be allowed to disclose information that the statute allows us to. I think that could be, I think the rule foresees that necessity and possibility. I think there's just one change of wording that could be done to make that clear. And if you look at subparagraphs 2B and 2C of the rule, the proposed rule, both of those deal with property tax orders. And if you look at, and they're identical provisions basically, one deals with property tax orders that has commercial information, and one paragraph talks about property tax orders that does not have commercial information. And if you look at the three little I under both of those provisions, it does allow for disclosure of information that is required under state law. And the only concern that the county has with this is that 59 1404, which is the statute that allows the county and the commission for that matter to disclose certain information, is permissive language in the statute. It says that they may disclose that information. And this rule talks about the disclosure is required under state law. And so I think just one small change would remedy the county's concerns, and that is to just add the disclosures required or allowed under state law. That way the county would continue to be able to disclose information that 59.1.404 allows us to disclose. So that's, in a nutshell, the county's concern and proposal to remedy.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Shaw? Commissioner Cragen, do you have some thoughts on that?
Sure. In your letter, you had also suggested inserting that the commission will not provide copies and so on. Do you still want us to consider inserting that phrase as well?
I guess that comment was raised to, I guess, to seek clarification from the commission whether this rule applies just to the commission's disclosure of information through its own orders, or whether it also applies to the county's disclosure of information. I think the change that I proposed will allow the county to disclose information that the statute allows it to. So I think that change alone would resolve the county's concerns.
Okay, thank you. As I often say in this setting, we are not like the legislature. We can't just make an amendment here at this meeting. We have a couple of options. We can adopt this amendment as it's proposed if we choose to do that, and then undertake to make a further amendment as the county has suggested. That would probably happen at our next commission meeting, which is currently scheduled for the second Thursday of October. We would have it ready at that, could have it ready at that meeting, would be published in the November 1st register, open 30 days for comment, and then we could take action. Would have to be the second meeting scheduled in December. The other thing we could do is let this rule expire without any action, which will happen if we don't adopt it by the 13th of December, and undertake to rewrite the amendment and then send it through with these proposed revisions. So those are our options.
Commissioner Dixon, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to.
So we can't approve this at this meeting and simultaneously at this meeting approve the submission of a new amendment, as long as we've got this language and we know how simple it is.
I see that you are of a mind to give our legislative director a conniption while she's away on vacation. So yes, we have the power to do that, but it's outside of our usual procedure to do things that way.
Lynn needs to be stirred up once.
That's right. It's her own fault for leaving town on a regularly scheduled commission meeting day.
Great.
Let me ask Mr. Shaw, if you feel strongly one way or another, would you have a problem with this going into effect the way it is, with the
undertaking that we would
prepare an amendment along the lines you suggest?
I think as long as we put something on the record that the county can continue to disclose information that the statute allows it to, notwithstanding this language that says the disclosure is required under state law. I think if we just made that clear on the record, then I think the county would be okay.
Even with that public record, you'd still ask us to make the
amendment? Oh, sure, yes, we would. Yeah, we'd want to get that clarified, because we certainly could have a situation where the county needs to disclose information which may have been sanitized in a commission order, but the statute allows us to disclose that, and we'd want to be able to say, yeah, the commission heard that issue, and they acknowledge that, yes, the county can disclose information that the statute allows it to. And
does this, Commissioner Cragen, does this rule purport to govern the counties? I mean, I understand.
That was one of the questions that I had.
There may be an implication there, but.
I don't know that this particular section on its face purports to do that, but many parts of Rule 88424P do directly govern the operation of county officers. And so by implication, one could argue that this one does too.
Commissioner Dixon, did you have something?
I'm just in favor of going ahead and approving the rule, and I'm fine with putting in the record that it's not intended to bind the counties from exercising what they need to do under the discretion of their duties.
Commissioner Cragen, what's your preference?
I think that I would prefer that we consider this rule, if we approve it, that we then prepare for our next meeting the suggested amendment from the county. I just remind everybody that we actually have some other issues that we may want to discuss with this rule before we take action.
Okay, would you care to make a motion?
Do we want to have the other discussion first, or do we want to have the motion on the table for that discussion?
Well, let's have the other discussion. I guess I misunderstood your comment. I thought you were saying maybe we don't want to move the new amendment at the same time because there are other things that we want to consider.
Oh, no. I'm just thinking of Lynn Solarzik's mental health by saying that we ought to do it.
That's
the other way.
Let's go ahead and discuss the other issues then. Anything else for Mr. Shaw?
No, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw.
As I recall, there was some concern expressed about the propriety of, by rule, closing the hearings related to locally assessed property tax that does not include commercial property. While that has been our practice, and we have some concern about the sensibilities of people who come in and disclose what may be very private and personal things in what is probably by law a public setting, by rule we wanted to address that concern. However, there was a difference of opinion among that and amongst the commission on that course, and so now's the time to talk about it, or I can make a motion, whatever you'd like.
Any comments from the other commissioners?
Well, without knowing for certain who raised those concerns, I don't see any point to, you know, repeat the conversation we had before. I do have a question on something, a provision in the rule that won't change anything. It's just more curiosity than anything else. So I'm the one who had the concerns and prepared to forego any discussion. I have not changed my mind or my position.
Well, I think I also had the concerns, and I'm never prepared to forego, especially with an audience and a microphone. But go ahead. Why don't you ask your question first?
On page 3, on line 100, I think it's four reciprocal agreements, B, for all taxes other than individual and tax and corporate franchise tax, the commission may share information gathered from returns with political subdivisions, the federal government, and without political subdivisions within and without the state. Information from a personal income or even a corporate income tax return, we're I mean, this may be ironic, because once it's submitted in a local Board of Equalization hearing, it's part of that record, and the county government certainly would have seen it. But if a city government wanted to see the information from an IRS return provided at a local Board of Equalization hearing, the check on that is only if the feds grant similar privileges or something like that. Is there a sufficient check to prevent us from providing corporate or personal income tax return information to a political subdivision such as a city or a special district or something like that? I just don't know how that works.
Commissioner Cragen, do you want to address that? Or if not, do you want me to address it?
Well, I'm not sure if the question is a legal question or a procedural question. I mean, I would still think that we're bound, no matter how we obtained the IRS return, the federal income tax return, that we are bound to not disclose it. So even if it was submitted to us as a part of a property tax appeal, I would still think that we would be under the same restriction. And so having said that, then the question becomes, do we have adequate safeguards in place in our procedures so that, because it's a property tax appeal, the contents of it wouldn't be inadvertently disclosed? So that's my best guess. Mr. Chairman, tell us what's really the truth.
Well, I would say that if a taxpayer chooses to submit an income tax return in a public hearing, that they've waived any privilege that they have. And we can certainly disclose information where there is a waiver. Typically, in the cases that I've seen where they do that, they ask for a confidentiality order or a protective order to eliminate further redisclosure of that information, and those procedures would all be available. So I think the burden would be on the taxpayer, though, if they're submitting something in a Board of Equalization hearing, for example, to get a protective order. And I think if the taxpayer or the tax commission were at one of the parties' request to try to subpoena income tax records, then I think we'd be subject to all of the confidentiality provisions that apply to returns that we have in our own possession that are submitted directly to us in the course of filing.
So in this case, in my hypothetical example, the normal confidentiality restrictions wouldn't prohibit us from disclosing corporate tax return information to a city if they simply requested it.
If the corporation voluntarily submitted their property tax return as evidence, or excuse me, their income tax return as evidence, then I think they would do that knowingly and understanding that it was part of a public record.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm not to weigh in on this, but just to kind of give you a concept, I agree with what you're saying. Just because a taxpayer files a piece of paper that says 1040 or a federal return and does not submit it and file it with the IRS, that piece of paper does not color federal data. They can expose that. They can share that as an individual with anyone or whomever. The only problem comes in is if that information was filed and then we got the information vis-a-vis the Internal Revenue Service, then it would take on the color. So I agree with what you're saying there.
We have our counsel present for other issues. Do you have any thoughts on this that you'd like to share? And
surprise question.
You need to, you'll probably need to come to a mic because this is being recorded, and identify yourself for the record.
Larry Lynn, Assistant Attorney General. I agree with your comments, Commissioner Johnson, and yours, Mr. Conover, that if a taxpayer just submits their tax return information in a proceeding or hearing that's otherwise open, that would be a waiver. But if we've obtained that information from the IRS, clearly all the confidentiality provisions and the restrictions that are set forth in our agreements with the IRS would apply.
Now, I understood the question to be in the context of if this amendment was passed. And in this amendment, we say that property tax hearings are closed. So
well,
it wouldn't be a presenting evidence in a public hearing. Does that change anything?
Well, if the hearing is closed, then our own rules governing the disclosure would make that information confidential. It wouldn't necessarily be a flow through from the IRS in that situation, but our own separate rules would make it confidential.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
But
thanks for indulging.
But as far as sharing it with the counties that would otherwise be entitled to it under our property tax laws, we'd be able to do that. Where if we otherwise obtained a tax return from the IRS, I don't think we could do that. So it would still be protected, but we'd just go down a different path of analysis depending on the law that protected it, whether it was our 59-1-404 property tax law or whether it was the IRS laws and our laws that interface with the IRS laws and our agreements with the IRS.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Ready for me to make that motion?
Yeah, let me just make one comment for the record. I mean, my preference would be to have property tax hearings open. I understand that there are confidential, well, not confidential, but sensitive information may be presented in some of these cases, but we have generally in the Constitution, we have an open courts provision, and the idea is that everybody's entitled to see how the government works, and that the presumption is that includes contested matters in judicial proceedings. Now, this is obviously not a judicial proceeding. We're talking about an administrative proceeding, but any person's property tax value affects the liability of other people in whatever taxing district it's in. So I think in a way that's not true in sales tax or income tax, I think property tax, generally the community has a stronger interest in knowing what's going on. Having said that, you know, we've had the discussion internally. Commissioner Dixon points out that we can solve a lot of those problems by the redaction program and making sure that we get out a good cross-section of the orders that we issue. And we have Senator Valentine's legislation, which essentially makes these matters confidential. So I accept the way we're going. I just wanted to make those comments.
If I could just make one slight correction, is the bill that Senator Valentine ran in the 2011 session gives us the authority to make them confidential. That bill doesn't in and of itself do it.
Important correction, thank you.
Okay, then I will make a motion that we adopt the proposed amendment to R8611A12, and note for the record that we believe that the county can continue to make disclosures that they are allowed to by law. Say that again. I'm sorry. Okay, the motion is that we adopt the amendment to R8611A12 and note for the record that we believe that the county may continue to make disclosures that they are allowed to by law.
Okay, thank you. Any all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
I don't believe it did.
I don't think
I'm sorry. Opposed?
No.
Commissioner Mark Johnson is opposed. All right. Let me just ask Mr. Shaw before you sneak out one other question, and also maybe a question for Mr. Lytle. Ever since property tax confidentiality provision was changed a few years ago, I know that county assessors generally have been struggling with, you know, what kind of waivers they need to get, what kinds of forms they need to get signed, what kind of information they can repeat in different hearings. Do you have a perception of whether or not Salt Lake County has a good handle on that?
I think Salt Lake County errs on the side of caution. I think they have a form that, unless it's a residential appeal, they have the participants in the hearing sign this form that basically says they will not disclose any commercial information at the hearing. So that would include obviously commercial appeals. And also, I believe they also have them sign it for vacant land appeals as well. But I think they, I mean, I guess erring on the side of caution, I'm not getting any feedback from them that they're struggling with that. I don't think they've had any opposition from anyone that has signed the form. So not that I'm aware of.
Okay, thank you. Denny?
Slightly, Denny Lytle, Property Tax Division, slightly different perspective. We hear from multiple counties almost every day with questions about this issue. And I would have to say that I believe at least the smaller and medium-sized counties are struggling with this issue and don't believe that the legislation answers their questions, that it just creates more questions in their minds. So we've been trying as a division to develop some better guidelines, but even we have struggled. Craig Jolly has spent a lot of time on this issue, but it's very difficult and there are still gray areas. So I think we would have to say that we and many of the counties are still struggling with this issue.
And I will note that that's just my own perspective. There may be staff at the county that have shared concerns with Mr. Lytle that I'm not aware of, but anyway, that's just my own observation.
I guess what I was maybe fishing for a little bit was if Salt Lake County, you know, given the considerable resources and sophistication of the assessor's office, if they had some good guidelines and procedures that address some of these concerns, I would just encourage you to share those with the property tax division. And because I have the sense that, I mean, Mr. Lytle confirms what I've said, that I know a lot of the smaller counties that don't have the same degree of sophistication are struggling with this. And also some of the smaller counties, they don't have as many sales. So the temptation, and that's probably the wrong word, but if they see an appraisal from somebody in one property tax case, that might give them information that they don't otherwise have, which they would like to use in another property tax case, whereas Salt Lake County, there's generally more information available just because there are so many more sales. So I just encourage the property tax division to continue to work with this. I'd really like to see a plain language guide to the county boards and the county assessor's office that would bring some clarity to this area, and it's not an easy area.
Liz Furman at Salt Lake County would be a good contact for the property tax division to talk to. She administers the board, and
thank you. We will follow up on that.
Thank you, and I know you're doing it already, but thank you.
At the risk of adversely affecting Mr. Jolly's mental health, you might remember that we had a presentation on an agenda that we were going to have him give us on this very topic.
That's true.
And we need to get it back on the
agenda.
We
need to get that back on the agenda. That's obviously something I'm interested in. Okay, thank you very much. I guess we still have another rule?
We do. We have a proposed amendment to Rule 873-22M. This will create a Section 42. In its general session this year, the legislature adopted Senate Bill 260, creating a non-repairable certificate that the DMV can issue in certain circumstances. And this rule gives some direction as to the procedure for documenting when that should happen. This is patterned after Section 41 in the same rule, so R873-22M Section 41, which deals with salvage certificates. And we have received public comment on this rule from State Farm. And in a nutshell, State Farm says that they'd rather not have to provide a copy of the properly endorsed check. They'd like to just be able to give us proof of payment in the form of a screenshot from their files management system. And I think Krista has included in here a copy of a check from State Farm that the DMV gave us from a request for a salvage certificate. This demonstrates that State Farm is already in the practice of providing us checks under 873-22M41. And then there's also a copy of a screenshot that State Farm provided us showing what they think would be the way that they would prefer to do this. I know that Mr. Simpson is here from the Division of Motor Vehicles, and we probably need to have him talk with us because he's had some contact with the folks at State Farm, and he also has an opinion on the course of action that we ought to take. But I think that that's probably a good introduction to the topic, and we'll haul Brad up here.
Welcome, Mr. Simpson.
Well, thank you. Brad Simpson from the Motor Vehicle Division. We did make some contact with State Farm, and I want to give a little bit of background real quick. As the commissioner did say before, this kind of is patterned after our salvage certificates. The division in 2012 issued about 23,000 salvage certificates, and only approximately 120 need to go through this process outlined in the rule because the insurance company was unable to obtain a certificate of title from the insured payee. The only difference between the salvage certificate and the non-repairable certificate is the non-repairable certificate irreversibly designates for destruction and to be used only for scrap metal. The comment was received from State Farm regarding to provide a copy of the check issued to the registered only. When they asked if they could do a screenshot, we didn't know what they meant. So we contacted State Farm, and what you have in front of you is the screenshot that they sent us. We talked with them a little bit about it. The division feels that we need a copy of both sides of the checks to show that the register owner has accepted the payoff and surrendered the ownership to the insurance company. We take very seriously the ownership of that vehicle is still in ownership of that individual or the lien holder until that check is endorsed. And so that's why we have always recommended having a copy of the check along with the endorsement on the back. The screenshot never shows an endorsement. That's where we got concerned with. So the division is recommend that rule not be changed and adopted as originally written.
Just had a question for you on the screenshot. I understand that on here it shows the date that the check was issued and a payment status in this one showing that it was paid on September 5th, 2012. Was State Farm able to confirm that that date indicates that the check actually cleared the bank?
No, that was our concern. They knew that the payment had been issued, but they couldn't confirm that, in our understanding, they couldn't confirm that that had been cleared and endorsed. And what we worry about is there's a lawsuit or a civil action going between the owner of the vehicle or the lien holder versus the insurance company, and there may be a further suit that we've already gave a non-repairable title to, which goes to scrap metal. So this is a little bit different. This new bill says that you can never put it back on the road, so it would be destroyed.
Mr. Chairman, could I comment on this as well?
Yeah, Mr. Conover.
Thank you so much. I believe what Brad is saying is also reinforced by our last interim committee meeting at Transportation when we were talking about tow yards and so forth and issuing titles. Senator Van Tassel, at the end of the meeting, we went up and chatted with he and Representative Daw, Co-Chair Daw, and he said, we appreciate the fact that you are protecting these vehicles because there are issues out there where there are disputes, and we would appreciate continuing to do what you're doing. Now, that's a little stretch from what we're talking about here. However, many times the value that the person feels the vehicle's worth and what the insurance company feels the vehicle's worth is not what is paid by the insurance company, and so they're still haggling about that. When we pick up a computer printout of a transaction file, we're looking at only the information that has been presented at the time of issuance, not the time of a deposit or endorsement. And I would support Director Simpson's recommendation that we continue with the practice. I think it's safer for the public, and I think it puts it in a cleaner light for the tax commission. Thank you.
One other concern as the director as I had is we're just talking to State Farm what they have as a screenshot. If we open this up to screenshots or proof of payment, I have no idea what we'd get from the thousands of or hundreds of insurance companies that we do this for. We may open ourselves up to take some what I would call not proof of payment. So I really feel comfortable that the check issued and check endorsed really protects us when we do these non-repairable certificates.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Simpson? Any other comments from the group?
Then
I would be ready for a motion.
I would move that we adopt the amendment to R873-22M42 as presented.
All in favor, say aye.
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 I think I did hear that one was unanimous, so I won't ask for it. That passes unanimously. Thank you.
And I assume that non-repairable certificate doesn't mean the certificate can't be repaired.
It doesn't? I may need to reconsider my vote. Okay. So it refers to the vehicle. The non-repairable refers back to the vehicle.
That's what I've been led to believe.
Oh.
I've been disabused of my prior understanding.
Now I understand the issue more clearly. Thank you. All right, does that conclude the action on the rules?
Yes.
Mr. Cragen? Commissioner Cragen. Executive Director's report.
You know, there's times in life where you're just speechless. You don't have a whole lot to say. And
it's an interesting concept.
Yes, but what I wanted to
for some of us, it's pretty rare.
And for me particularly. But I just wanted to just tell you that I don't really have a lot, but I just wanted to give you just a little bit of an update on the Deloitte & Touche security assessment. They have not issued our report yet. It should be coming out at the end of the month. If not, it'll be the first part of October. And they're moving along. I think they're a little bit behind schedule, but that's okay.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Conover? And to the extent that they've identified things informally in the course of their work, we've taken appropriate action.
They haven't disclosed any of that to us yet.
Okay.
But from the indications that I get from Tim Hastings, who is the coordinating director for Deloitte & Touche, handling the whole operation, in steering meetings, he keeps saying how the tax commission is doing this and the tax commission is doing that. So I think we're doing some things in a very favorable way. But I know that they'll find some things, and I welcome that. We as an agency welcome that, because security is of our highest concern.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner's reports.
I just wanted to note that our farmland assessment advisory committee meeting is next week, next Wednesday in this room at 1:30. And that's the statutory committee that sets the farmland valuations, just like we went through on this urban farming. And from that, you can expect that there'll be a rule coming up, and we need to make sure that that rule is passed in December and ready to go into effect on January. So you can anticipate that.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner, we made an error on our motion on 873-22M42. We have to make sure that that has an effective date of October 1st. It can't be effective today. Because the statute that underlies it is not effective until October 1st. So do you want us to just make the record to say that, or should I make a new motion, or what would you like to do?
The motion was to approve the rule. Does the rule have an effective date? Mm-hmm. On it?
There are notes all over the place saying don't forget to do this, but I did it anyway.
Why don't you go ahead and make a clarifying motion just so that's clear?
Okay. Make an additional motion that on the amendment to Rule 873-22M42, that it will have an effective date of October 1st, 2012.
All in favor, say aye.
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 That passes unanimously. Thank you. All right. We understand that the Attorney General's office is losing one of their soldiers. He's going to go to work for the county. That person is involved in many of our property tax cases, and a waiver has been requested. I would entertain a motion to go into a closed session to discuss those litigation matters.
I move that we go into closed session to discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 That passes unanimously. We'll go into closed session, and then we'll reconvene to report. We are back in open session. Again, the Utah State Tax Commission, continuation of the meeting on Thursday, September 27th. After discussions in the closed session, we determined that no action is necessary at this time, and I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
This is Commissioner Dixon. I move we adjourn.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That motion is approved. We are adjourned. Thank you very much.